in the studio. I've got Robs with our Nature Connection chat. Morning, Robs.
Good morning.
Thank you for popping in at the last second. Confirmation 5 minutes before the interview.
That's all right. I was in my car, so it was easy.
Yeah, that's good. Just always be available like that, and I'll just call you anytime for a chat. Nature Connection. Actually, why don't we say, what does Nature Connection mean to start with?
It's beyond. Every time you ask me this, I always like try and give a different answer.
What your elevator speech?
And that's the point of it. I think it's like it's not necessarily the destination, but the journey. And if you ask me in a year, in 2 years, in 5 years, it's probably like a slightly different answer.
Yep.
But it describes the journey of relationship with the natural world, which includes yourself as well, and it includes the people around you. And then obviously the more classical natural world of plants and birds and insects and other biological beings.
What did you think it meant 20 years ago?
20 years ago, I'd never heard of it. I'm like, Nature Connection? What would that be? 10 years ago, I'd have probably been, sort of refers to that human that we were sort of designed to be, and in a way I still feel that, before the agricultural revolution happened, how we lived in balance with the natural world and knowing our place within that and the relationships that sort of tied us to it.
Okay. I will talk about the left brain, right brain thing we were just briefly discussing before we went on the air, because I think it kind of does relate. I was playing a talk by a guy called Ian McGilchrist, Dr. Ian McGilchrist, a psychiatrist from the UK, and he's written a book called The Master and the Emissary, and he uses a little story to kind of describe it, which is that the master is the person who guides the community and is getting very busy, so hires someone to handle all the details because they decided that if they got involved in the details, they wouldn't be very good at doing the overall big picture,
looking
looking after the community. And so the emissary is really good at handling the details, but starts to think it knows more than the master and kind of sidelines the master and kind of takes over and then destroys the community.
Mm.
And that's the metaphor for the left brain, right brain. So the master is the right brain, and it has the big picture, and the emissary is the left brain. And he talks about people they used to cut the corpus callosum, the middle, the thing that joins the two hemispheres.
Uh-huh.
There used to be, for people with epilepsy or something, that used to be a way of doing things. So they've got all these, and it completely, utterly changes people. But one of the characteristics is that the left brain, when it's communicating, it's very almost arrogant, very sure that it's right, and often quite wrong, but quite obsessed about details. Another description he describes is, he imagine a bird picking seeds on a forest floor or something like that, and so the left brain is focused on the seeds and like being accurate with the beak, real narrow focus on detail, while the right brain is patrolling for predators and things that they need to be aware of.
Yeah.
And what he's saying is that we are a left brain dominated society, and especially our science is very left brain.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking of, oh no, that's a distraction. Anyway, I won't go there.
Did it say that's a modern sort of transition to our left brain?
So he's talking about the Western world
and
science, modern science.
It definitely ties in with my experiences, and I'm always sort of cautious. I know there's so much research done, and that's valuable, and we find things out, but ultimately my own experiences is what I really listen to, with openness for those to change. But
And that sounds like trying to get away from the left brain obsession with detail.
Yeah.
I'd say, broader view.
Personally, I'd say I definitely got quite a strong left brain as well, because I guess maybe that's to do with my brain forming through childhood in a city in a very sort of Western.
Oh yeah.
Maybe that would have been different in a different setting, but it is interesting. And I'm really interested in, I guess, like I said a minute ago, sort of the humans that we were designed to be, sort of before you know, the Industrial Revolution and Agricultural Revolution and all these things which really influenced the context of how we live. Sort of prior to that, for the majority of our time on this planet as humans, you know, before we even discovered you can grow things and farm things, it was about living in balance and harmony, and the better we did that, the more sustainable and resilient and content a community we would be, and therefore the skills that would develop over probably a million years to be good at doing that, I think really shaped how our brain functions and it works. And that ties in for me, you know, if I'm in the bush and a lot of what I do is around sort of using your senses and developing and having awareness. So if I'm going for a little walk in the park or through the bush, just really listening and really hearing the bird songs and really paying attention to the trees and the changes and the shadows and the wind and as many different levels as I can. And if I tell people to do that, it's like, well, why? And personally for me, it makes me happy, you know. It's like I love it. It helps me feel connected. But I know that's a personal experience I'm having. But I guess that science goes beyond that, and it says it's not just a personal experience, because science says when we're doing that and experiencing the world and using our bodies and our senses as we're designed to do, it has a more holistic sort of health, emotional, spiritual, physical health benefits. You know, that feeling of well-being when you tune your car up and you get it running really smoothly. Mm. It's nicer to drive and it's more efficient and it just works a lot better. And so if we're using our brains and our senses as they were designed to be used, I think it's kind of quite limitless the benefits that can give you. And it's not just about nature anymore. It's not just about enjoying plants and animals, but it's about it becomes health and well-being and it's a deep feeling of belonging. And in a world where, you know, mental health conditions are quite rife now with depression and loneliness and anxiety and many struggles that people go through, for me this is a huge missing link, which really sort of remedies a lot goes a long way to help.
That does tie in with what Ian McRitchie's saying, is the obsession with the detail of the left brain is not good for our mental health.
Mm.
Yeah, it basically saying the same thing through a different lens, I think.
Yeah. And I think we've known it for a long time. You know, a lot of people turn to meditation practices or things to bring a little bit more balance, or even yoga, you know, bring a bit more balance into your life. But I think they're all under that same sort of umbrella of slowing down and being aware and tuning in to yourself and to the world and just making time for that to happen. And there's so many reasons how that's good for you. And I guess that's what I'm doing, you know. If I'm on the bush, I'm aware. Mm. Every step I'm making, it's a meditation in terms.
Probably in the language of what I've just been talking about, it's putting you back, getting some balance back between the left brain and the right brain.
Because
he doesn't say the left brain's a waste of time, this guy, the scientist. He's saying it's important, it has important things to do, but it can't be in charge.
Yeah.
But it's the left brain seems to be associated with speech, so
okay.
It tends to, I don't know. And that's our culture, and how we can have, like, we know so much about all sorts of things. We know so much detail from science about everything, and yet we're really messing the world up at the moment. And that's that's the picture.
And if we know that, you know, if science is telling us that, then obviously working with kids and giving the kids the opportunity to be a bit more freer and intuitive with how they experience the world, so not necessarily just information based, but to really be, you know, experience the world with curiosity and awareness in that sort of developmental stage, you know, can potentially just have a huge, huge impact on people's lives in so many levels.
I imagine that kids arrive, babies arrive with balanced approach to life in terms of left brain, right brain stuff, in terms of not being obsessed with detail. I mean, you can't really tell because they're babies, but I presume they get trained into the situation just by the culture they grow up in.
Yeah. Well, I guess the practices, the techniques that I'm sort of teaching, or, you know, trying to encourage and inspire people to practice, really are sort of paralleled to a baby's journey of experience.
Yeah.
You know, the curiosity and the awareness and the just, you know, how does a baby learn to talk? It just, it watches and it mimics and it finds patterns and it sees certain sounds go along with certain actions or certain, you know, things happening, and eventually it puts two and two together and tests it and it tries it and it sees if it gets the reaction, and all of a sudden it becomes a word and they learn how to form that word, and then it becomes speech. And that's what I do. You know, I'm not going into the bush. The less I know, or the less I think I know, the probably the more profound my experience is.
Okay.
Which is quite an interesting concept, and sometimes a challenging one to experience when I'm running workshops for people.
Because
culturally we like answers, and answers, you know, are more and more, there's an expectation that they come quickly. You could ask me any question you want, and I could pick up a phone and I could answer it, you know, an information-based question.
Yes.
Within reason right now.
Yeah.
It hasn't been like that for long, you know.
No.
But even when I was a kid, you can go to a library and you could probably spend an hour or two and you might find that answer. But the idea that questions need answers is something that I challenge. Like the root word of questions, quest.
Right.
You know, and it's the journey. It's not necessarily having the answer, because when we have an answer, we stop the quest. We stop looking for things. And within that quest, you might find all sorts of things which you weren't even looking for. And it's the journey that we take. And as soon as we think we know something, for me, that's a sad moment, because we stop trying to deepen that knowledge and to experience more things. We sort of close that book. So, you know, questions are great, but the longer we leave them open, the more that quest will nourish us. I remember an experience about 8 years ago or so, and I was at, we played this game with the kids this last week, and we were sat in a circle, and my friend Steve, who runs a sort of nature connection school down in Otaki, he said, "All right, close your eyes." So we all closed our eyes. We didn't know what was going on. It was never introduced. We were going to play a game. He just said, "Close your eyes," which immediately gets you, oh, something's going on. If you knew it was a game, there's that expectation. But because you don't know what's going on, that sort of heightens everything a little bit, you know? Because you just, what's going on? You're just trying to find things out. Your brain's working overload. And then you place an object in everyone's hand. It's about 13 of us or so in a circle. And he says, "All right, you've got like 30 seconds to touch, to taste, to smell, whatever you want to do. Just don't use your eyes, the object." And they're all objects he's found in the bush, but quite peculiar ones. Nothing was really obvious to what it was.
Yeah.
And after 30 seconds, you pass it round and you get a new one. And eventually everyone gets 30 seconds with every object. And he comes around, he takes them all, puts them back in his bag, puts the bag away. And he says, "All right, open your eyes. What was it? What did you hold?" And so this big conversation, discussion starts. And it's like, I think it was like, no, it wasn't that. It was one of these. And after about 5-10 minutes, the discussion starts dying down, and everyone looks to Steve expectantly, you know, "All right, we're ready to know what it was." And Steve just smiles, laughs, and walks off. And I remember at the time feeling pretty angry at Steve, because I was so desperate to know, because, you know, that's what I expect to happen.
Yes.
But I didn't. And once my anger died down, I really started to understand, because to this day, I might pick up an object or feel an object, and that memory is still there, and that curiosity is still there. I'm still trying to find out what those things were.
You still don't know what they are.
And I'm still thinking about it. And the more questions like that and mysteries that we have remain open, really inspire us and draw us to walk and navigate this world with a lot more curiosity and mystery and wonder and you know, for me, joy and passion.
So you got over the frustration fairly quickly, because the frustration could stay. I know, I imagine a lot of people would be like, they could be 5 years later thinking about it and go, "That still frustrates me."
Yeah.
But I guess
definitely. Yeah, it didn't last long, and I got the joke and the humor in it, and
yeah.
and the value in it. And I really apply that sort of concept when I'm running workshops. You know, I'm often not. There's a lot of mystery involved and a lot of really wanting to know the answers.
So there's something I was going to ask you about, because that reminded me, and I can't remember dates and things, a while ago you were telling me about you were going to go to, it sounded more like an outdoor skills conference thing.
True, yeah.
But you were going to do something kind of like that. I can't remember any of the details, just that thing of a little bit unexpected and what the audience wasn't expecting. So can you fill us in?
Yeah, sure. So that was the Natural Phenomena conference, inverted commas, up in Whangarei.
Yeah.
So I think it's apparently the 18th year they've run it or something like that. It's been going on for a long time. And it is basically a nature-based education conference with different people presenting from different angles, and a lot of people in early childhood education, but some teachers and other people with alternative education backgrounds, just coming to meet and connect and to learn and to develop their skill set, really. So myself and a friend and colleague, Nick, were up there running a few workshops from this, you know, nature connection perspective. And it was good. It was a lot of games that we played with them.
So it was my assumption that it was traditionally kind of focused on skills.
Well, not necessarily. There was a few, academic people. There's a lady from the States who's done a PhD in sort of documenting stories, you know, personal experience stories for all ages, really. So she did a talk about that. There was sort of some more sort of motivational people who've had challenges and overcome their challenges. There's quite a good mix. Sort of dealing with people with challenging behaviours and things, sort of more classroom-based context.
Yeah.
But I felt what myself and Nick were bringing was a bit of a gap there, which needed to be filled. So a lot of people who are really passionate, and obviously, there's, you know, like we talked about, there's a lot of academic studies into the benefits, especially for kids, of getting them outside and into a natural setting.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, you know, that feel good about that, so that they're taking action and they're running classrooms in the park or in a nature-based setting. But once they're there, they're not necessarily, you know, there's not really any training available, really, to sort of how to facilitate that space,
right,
and how to really make the most of that for the kids. And I think that's mine and Nick's speciality. We came in, run a few workshops based around that, and I think we were quite well received there.
Okay.
It was a cool, my highlight of the weekend. So it was a game we play called Eagle Eye. It's kind of a classic game, or ultimate hide and seek, we call it.
Yes.
And basically, once you know the game, which is really simple, you can play it anywhere. So you're just walking along, and all of a sudden you just stop and start hiding in, start counting down, and everyone just disappears and goes and hides.
Yeah.
So we taught that game, and we played a couple of rounds in both the workshops. And then in the evening, you know, all the workshops had finished, people were finishing their dinner and sitting around chatting, you know, a good 100, 150 people. We knew probably like 60 or 70 of the people there knew the game because they had come to our workshop. So we got up in the middle of the sort of, you know, gathering area, and I just started, at the top of my voice, hiding in, and I just started counting down.
Oh, yes.
And it took them, you know, a lot of them, they'd never done it in that context, so it took them a few seconds, but once they saw what happened...
Right, so half the people immediately
evaporated. Like a whole bunch of them suddenly just got up and bolted into the bush or behind the tent and just started hiding. And then all the other people who weren't, you know, aware of the game, who didn't come to the workshops, were just watching with like, what's going on here? And then they figured out what's going on, and they thought it was amazing.
Right.
And, and I think that was a powerful moment to just, it's light, it's fun, and it's not serious. And you don't need to think about it, but it's so valuable. And if at any moment when you're in a group, they know you're going to start counting for the whole day.
Yeah.
It just gives that extra level of awareness. You know, when you're walking around, part of your brain's trying to figure out a good place to hide, because you know at any moment you might need to go and hide. And it's fun, and it seems like nothing really, but you know, if you do that, a lot more mysteries and a lot more activities like that, your brain is functioning a lot more at different levels, and you're looking in your senses, even if you're just chatting to your mate, there's things going on. And you know, Tinder hunts, you know, so you're always looking for dry Tinder, and there's so many little threads of connection which you can you know, inspire people to want to do, and it becomes a habit. And then a little walk from your doorstep to your garden gate can quite quickly become a very different experience and a much deeper experience.
It does sound like what I was talking about before, the example from Ian McRitchie of just the bird picking at the seed. So there's laser focus on seed while the other half of the brain is just checking out what's going on around them. It sounds kind of like that, like you've introduced that into people's lives for a moment. You should get all the text messages and every now and again send out a group text. 10-9, or however you did it, run and hide. Hey, we're just about out of time, but you wanted to talk also about a workshop you're doing. But is this actually a Nature Connection workshop?
No, because summer holidays are here, so I just wanted to plug a couple of workshops for the kids happening in January. So the 10th, 11th and 12th is my normal bush immersion and naturecraft workshop.
Yeah.
5 and up. And then the week after, the 17th, 18th and 19th, for the first time, I'm running a 3-day knife crafting workshop. So we won't be heat treating the metal, but we'll be... I've got a bicycle-powered grinder, so we'll be shaping the metal and sharpening it and making a wooden handle, so a lot of whittling and a lot of... a whole heap of different skills to learn to make a knife and a leather sheath, so a bit of leather working in there as well.
Okay, where can people hook into this online?
Phone me is the best. I'll put the poster on the notice board, and I'll put some around town as well.
Or can we put it on our What's On guide as well?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So look on the What's On guide. I'll send that to Aaron today. And the other one is. Next week, what's the date that I wrote?
22nd of December, Beats.
22nd, yeah, so I'm running my first, so the other side of my passions is electronic music, just about to finish an album, and I'm electronic music production workshop without using computers, because I don't really like using computers so much, so it's using the old school style, using synthesizers and samplers and drum machines and groove boxes. So a lot more hands-on.
So it's, you've drawn a line for technology.
I'm not dissing computers. It's amazing what you can do on a computer. They're kind of limitless, but just the way that I make my music, and it's a different experience of it.
I think limits sometimes, in fact, a lot of musicians artificially apply limits to themselves to stimulate the creativity.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's nice to have a framework to work within. And then get creative and make it your own. So that's happening. It's a full day workshop. We're going to cover, you know, a whole heap of sound design, sculpting sounds, making beats, arrangements, you know, different production techniques, using a whole heap of different gear.
Have you got all this gear?
I've got a lot of gear. The last 6 months I've been acquiring a bit for this purpose.
I know everyone's thinking, we might as well say it out loud, it's kind of funny that the Nature Connection guy is hoarding electronic music equipment.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's life in balance and, you know, doing the things that you love, that's connection.
Yeah. So how can people hook into this as well?
I'm going to post it around town as well and on the notice board. Can I put that on your What's On guide as
absolutely,
well?
Absolutely, yeah. Because that's... quite soon, 10 days' time.
It is, and there's only 5 places for that one, so I can spend more time with people individually. Get in early for that one if you're keen. And that's, I've put on the flyer sort of 12 and up, you know, if you've got younger kids who are really passionate, you know, let me know and I'm sure we can figure that out. But even if you're an adult who's interested in making electronic music, it's open for anyone really.
Yeah, cool. All right, folks, we've been talking to Robs with our Nature Connection chat and also our Beats chat. That's what that's called, Beats. Yeah. Beats with Robs, with 2 Zs. That's it?
Like the Z in Beats and the Z in Robs.
Did I write that? I'm just talking now.
You lost me.
Yeah. Well, I thought that's what I read. What happened at the start of the show was Rob showed me a picture on his phone and got me to write down the dates of this thing because he knew he wouldn't remember. And then I've interpreted all sorts of things to it, which really have no consequence whatsoever. I think we should just end the show. Does that sound good to you? Sure. And I'll let you go.
I'm just pulling up this file through again. But yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay, all right. Thanks for coming in, man.
Cool, thanks.
All right, yes, as I said, definitely time for me to go. I will see you all again in the morning.